I thought you were both the same, so you think for real, but you also said that she's a little gentle bohemian.
In the UN system, it's classified as a major group. Indigenous people. thank you, Professor, if I can move to the next slide. What basically this slide covers, is just most of this information appears in our system, so I will not go through it. But the vision and mission of DEEP, there are programs, the six programs, and then performance care programs. Next slide, please. So vision, I'm going to skip all of those slides. There's a vision, there's a mission, the three programs on slide five. Just to mention one thing with regards to the new EME and coming into the new year, that is moving forward, Chair and members. Next year, from the 1st of April, in our reporting next year, Program 1 and Program 6 changes somewhat. And in terms of our estimates of net and expenditure documents, Program 6 now includes business performance. Next slide. It includes business performance, includes a standard public works program, and it includes international relations. But this year that we're reporting on is still as it is reported on the state. Next slide is basically our public emphasis of risk of this, then coming to the performance. In terms of tourism, one of the things that we can report on is our arrival. Obviously, this is where open tourism and ourselves as a department, we probably would report more or less the same thing, but by and large, this work is undertaken by SA Tourism. And last year, we saw the arrival of over 8 million people in international arrivals. And if I could remind them that in terms of our stress plan, we're striving to reach a 10 million figure by 2010. In terms of domestic travel statistics, there is a statistics check. An average number of annual trips to traveler is about 3.1. So just challenges. I think we still have a challenge in terms of domestic travel and I suppose international. There's still tourists still go to Mpumalanga, Gauteng, KZN and Western Cape provinces. If remember, one of our key performance areas is to increase geographic spread in terms of tourism, both in terms of international and domestic. We are still struggling with regard to ensuring that there is increase in terms of the visitors to the other provinces. But it's still work that we're still doing and checking. Next slide, please. In terms of quality assurance, we have done some training in terms of the port of entry officials, mainly in airports, as well as ground ports of entry, especially with regard to our neighboring countries, border ports. I don't know what members' experiences are, but I'm finding that there's improvement. We're not there yet, but there's, I think, significant improvement in terms of the attitude of immigration officials in our ports of entry. And then in terms of grading, again, 4,905 establishments were graded, and the grading council, which I think comes to see you next week, will give you further details, and the number of rooms that have been graded is 87,281. In terms of safety, we've now developed a framework for tourist safety and awareness. This is done in partnership with the police services, the provinces, and the industry. The minister hosted a meeting earlier in the year with captains of industry where we discussed the strategy of tourism safety and awareness, and Minimax adopted by March this year tourism safety and security strategy and its own implementation plan. In terms of rollout, although this will be outside of the reporting year, we've had safety and security fora in 5 provinces. Those provinces are listed. We continue to work in terms of the remaining provinces to have the safety forum. But what those forums do, they work with communities, municipalities, the police, tourism officials to look at overall tourist safety. On top of it, we have worked with the industry in terms of rationalizing the tourism safety tip pamphlet that normally you would find in a hotel. And what we had agreed on with the industry that we need to just rationalize messaging because you would get anywhere, those tips when you travel to any country, but depending on how you package it, it sometimes can make people a little bit nervous. So we have that agreement with the industry, and this is being rolled out to all the provinces. Next slide, please. In terms of product development, we had reported, I think, before that we had signed an agreement with MESH, which is the agency that is responsible for all FIFA hospitality and ticketing and accommodation. They have, as we had reported before, agreed for the first time to have non-hotel accommodation for the World Cup. And we have agreed that we will make sure that SMME companies then make the establishment available in terms of that partnership. We have run a rollout program with MESH where we've been informing people about with MESH and the Grading Council about this agreement and encouraging them to create the establishment, because the requirement for you to be part of the booking engine, you're going to have to be a graded establishment. And through the Tourism Enterprise Program, we have been subsidizing the small and medium enterprises. We have been working with provinces to identify 16 projects that we are currently marketing in terms of product development. Those are in our priority areas in terms of the growth and competitiveness strategy. And we have also worked with cities in terms of improving product information for hostesses. We had, I think, in the briefing that SA Tourism did last year on the 2010 plan, one of the areas that has been identified was information for tourists, especially in the hostel. So that work is ongoing. And I've already spoken about the studies. What are the challenges? Most establishments, especially, particularly SMEs, sometimes they allow, because you're grading, you grade it for a year. So what they tend to do often is to then not renew, and then they lose their grading status. And it's something that we are working on because I think it's mainly a result of insufficient knowledge of the system. And we have, and also in terms of the 16 projects, there is a challenge in terms of securing investment for the next slide, please. Then in terms of unblocking the channel, we have we've been working with Home Affairs and Foreign Affairs around visa restrictions with India and China, and having been reduced the time that people wait to get a visa from 10 days to not more than 5 days. And we are continuing to do this work with the other departments, Home Affairs and Foreign Affairs, and looking at other markets. So that's work in progress. And we have, as part of that, developed a template on the visa requirements for new portfolio markets. Next slide, please. Then in terms of ELUF, we have, it was in the year in that we developed an early strategy that was, we worked with both the Department of Transport and the Department of Public and Enterprises, and we had an early strategy adopted by Cabinet in May 2006. And in implementation of that, we've seen an increase in terms of flocks of airlines that do come to South Africa. The five Gulf cooperation countries, Saudi, UAE, Oman, Qatar, and Kuwait, we've seen an increase in terms of that. And also we've seen, in December last year, we saw the Delta Airlines flying to South Africa for the first time as part of that. Before that, the only airline that used to fly direct was SAA, only on that, on the US route. And we've also seen an increase in terms of France. We've had four additional slots that were given to Air France. That there has been this year, the momentum has a little bit, has not been as quick as before, but in the year in question, that we can report that we've seen, since the adoption of the early strategy, there's been improvement. But also in the region, for countries like Mozambique, we've also seen an increase in, or agreement in terms of increasing the frequency. We finished the last year, member of the skills conference last year, or the national tourism conference last year, and we have out of that process and now have a skills plan, an amended skills plan that has got endorsement by everybody in the system. And this year that we are in the process of rolling out implementation. And those are the figures in terms of the people that have been trained within the industry next last year. We have, in terms of implementation of the charter and scorecard, we finished a baseline study on industry state of transformation. We have also looked at, we have also increased in the use of graded establishments by national government departments. We have a self-assessment tool, as opposed to TOL, for the tourism industry on BE charter and scorecard compliance. We developed that, and we worked on a verification system and ensure that it's in line with the code of good practice, not good practice. Mm-hmm. And we have developed a public sector compliance. Now I'm getting embarrassed. The presentation is gone. But I really apologize for that. I thought I picked up all the resources, but it's good practice. And one of the challenges, and I think I don't need to say this to members, but the whole issue of scorecard is basically a voluntary system, and in terms of the more industries getting transformed, or more companies getting transformed, it's a bit of a challenge, especially in the smaller companies within the industry, which categorizes quite a significant amount of companies in the tourism industry. We've seen a change in terms of the more bigger and listed companies, and one of the challenges there, as opposed to being ownership, the challenge really is the employment of, basically, the employment of executives, especially women. Next slide. The Tourism Enterprise Program, we've seen an increase in the number of SMMEs that are supported through the program, and that was increased by 32% as tourist guides. Same thing, we've seen an increase of 30% of the overall industry, the black tourist guides. 30% in overall, and those are the figures and a breakdown in terms of how many we supported in terms of business linkages, business plan and development and marketing. And then the overall value of the transactions resulting from the linkages was 751 million, And we've also developed a second economy tourism strategy. Let me say that the strategy implementation also rolls out into this financial year. In terms of program three, we have finalized, you see the thing, Chair, we will report in October of this year, the following year, of work that we finished in March. So it feels like it's not that happened a long time ago. So, but the fishing rights allocation process was finished last year, and we've seen 59% of the right holders being compliant. We've issued new permits in three new fisheries, experimental octopus east coast, but herring and well, a survey on hot mackerel was complete, as well as 10 permits for both bait whale washing and shacking diving. In terms of regulatory environment, we published the Integrated Coastal Management Bill, and that is now in the parliamentary system. The coastal management bill. We have, by the end of the financial year, we have diverted the draft marine aquaculture policy for public comment. We've now at this stage finalized it. And we've built a policy on transfer of fishing rights in terms of change in ownership. We've finalized three marine protected areas, those are listed there, and we have a draft policy for subsistence and small scale fisheries. Just to say one comment, though, Chair, is that the small scale fisheries, we finished the policy in about March last year, or end of the financial year. We have not gazetted it because we've had quite an intensive process of comment and engagement with small scale and subsistence fishers, and in that regard, we're having now, for the first time, a summit on the 1st and the 2nd of November 2007. I would imagine Dr. Mbaku can not yet.
I don't.
Okay.
Thank you.
Apologies for that. It's a national summit on the 1st and the 2nd of November on to take the issues of subsistence, because I think it's an issue that this committee has been dealing with and raising for quite a bit. We're working with NGOs that are helping us in terms of development of the policy framework, and the workshop is on the 1st and the 2nd input. Honorable Chalmers says that's good. It's charmed by Port Elizabeth. I thought your constituency was outside of Port Elizabeth. Some of the challenges, they're not in the summit departmental. I've spoken about subsistence fisheries, and I think the one of the challenges that we have is the depletion of marine stock, and that, as a consequence, puts a lot of pressure in terms of people's livelihoods around the coast, because they had a historically dependent on the fishing. And if there's a depletion in terms of stock, and that, by extension, does affect people in the coastal area. That's one of the challenges. Next slide, please. Research, the computer economic studies on three commercial fisheries, those are listed, Hake Landline, Hake Longline, and the Mazar Shark. And they have done a what they call a scientifically defensible stock estimates and recommendations for 18 fisheries, and a graduate science program to ensure skills development was developed. This is, Chair, I think it's an issue that the committee has been raising with us for quite a while. We are happy to report that we now have a program which is going to be basically for young and mainly black science for the masters and the PhD. And Dr. Magic can speak to the targets later. And as part of the research, the voyages that have been undertaken, and we are still at the time of end of the year, we're 60% complete with construction in the Marion Bay, Island Bay. From a compliance perspective, we now have a new vessel monitoring system. I think the last time I was in Parliament, it was quite a topical issue with industry. Some people feeling that the monitoring system was not affordable, and that there was general resistance in the industry, but I think we went ahead with the system anyway, because it's a practice in many fishing countries. And through that system, we are beginning to track the trend from an enforcement perspective. We have, towards the end of last year, recruited about 900 volunteers that worked on our coast as part of our enforcement last year, just to speed up or scale up enforcement along the coastline, and that is an additional 900. We are working with the National Youth Service. Also, we trained officials at the port of entry to work on to be able to administer. Okay, let me explain that. The green scorpion, you could argue that it's not the same, but it's within that framework. The green scorpions, we have designated them in terms of law. And they've got basically peace officers in terms of law. And these were basically volunteers, people that helped us with enforcement. This is where the similarity over the overlap is. They were working with the green scorpions, but it's more unemployed youth that were working with the green scorpions in the coastal areas as part of job creation. And then we have, in terms of our own enforcement capacity, we are now having at least an officer for every 7.5 kilometers of our coastline. Our target is to move it down to about one officer for every 5 kilometers, but we are sitting at 7.5 kilometers now. At the financial level, the fund, the Marine Living Resources Fund, there's a specific briefing around that, so I'm not going to go into the details, just to say that we have now fully implemented the financial system. We are still finalizing the cost recovery framework. There was a draft at the end of the financial year. We have also developed the marine administrative system, which helps us really to monitor and rationalize the permitting system within the industry. And we've worked on a revenue strategy for the fund, and we've collected an amount of 106 million. Some of the challenges we can deal with in more detail at the actual briefing, but there are issues in terms of cooperation by the industry in terms of enforcement and levy collection generally. I suppose it's not unique, next slide, to the fishing industry, but it's one of the areas where people are just reluctant to pay. So it's continuing work on this. For the biodiversity, I'm now moving chair to program 5. We have finalized regulations on threatened or protected species. We've also published an elephant management policy that is going to come to effect. Yeah, we're still in the process of finalizing it within government, but it's going to come into effect. Most probably, I suppose, towards the end of the year. We've also developed a draft national biodiversity framework. Again, that is also in this financial year in the process of finalization, and a draft risk assessment framework for the chairperson's favorite topic, GMOs. In terms of conservation and sustainability, we continue to increase numbers of kids that do visit the parks. Dr. Mabunda is sitting in the back. We can talk about that a little bit more, but we had a target of 5,000 kids to visit our national park. We had, in the last year, achieved 7,400. We are first chaired 6 GMO applications, and all of them were recommended. And then we had one, we dealt with one application for release of biocontrol agents, and also that one was also recommended. And then we did some work, which is basically part of the TFCA work, and drug substances in the TFCA areas. Next slide. Expansion of protected areas. Rakhtasov, let me just correct this, because the listing of Rakhtasov only happened in July. But in terms of technically in the year in question, we submitted the listing. So the declaration really happened outside the 43. Makuleke wetland also gained, is now recognized as a Ramsar site. We looked at 19 national parks management plans, which is a requirement in terms of the Protected Areas Act. We finalized the protected areas register, which is also a requirement in terms of that act. And the FAO-BOS members would know this, that the FAO-BOS National Park was deproclaimed, and a new park, Mukala National Park, was proclaimed. I think we'll just give a briefing on that, so when we proposing the deprogramming, and that is basically linked to a land claim. And we addressed management capacity for marine protected areas. I think one of the challenges is the issue of full settlement support, especially with regard to areas where there have been land claims by communities. I think it's one of the challenges in terms of ongoing management of not less. I mean, I don't think the issue is the land claim necessarily, but it's the issue of how do you then have management and a relationship between the park managers and communities, where in some instances there's no, as I said, source of livelihood outside of the park. That people would continue wanting to come back because they are the owners, and continue knocking on the doors of park managers and say, we'd like to benefit, we are the owners of this park, outside of any other agreement. And I think it's some of the challenges that we're going to have to address in moving forward. Next slide, please. We have worked, we've signed an agreement with Botswana and Zimbabwe, and Limpopo for the Limpopo Shashes TFCA. And we've answered many parliamentary questions in this regard, Honourable Morgan. and we got recognition for the joint economic work that we're doing as part of the BSC LNS. Benguela Current Large Marine Ecosystem Program, which we're doing in joint cooperation with Angola, Namibia, and Lesotho. Program 2. We have, in the last year, finalized the EIA, the streamlined EIA regulations, and these were promulgated in April 2006 and came into effect in July 2006. We've also finalized, by the time of the end of the financial year, we've finalized the process of consultation, we've gone on for public consultation on the NEMA bill, which the members were briefed on last week, it's now in Parliament. And we've also done work in terms of identification and publication of sensitive areas for Gauteng and the Western Cape. Continue on the processing of EIA applications. Members had expressed concern on this issue, and we continue to do the work. Obviously, those figures are at the end of the financial year, but I think Madiawich will have details on up-to-date figures as up-to-date as we can get. But those are basically with national level, we reduce the backlog by 75%. That is deep, not necessarily national as in all the provinces. And we've also created a new capacity and support directorate, and we've done some EIA frameworks and guidelines for everybody. We have had a success rate of 100% against all core challenges with regard to our authorization. We continue training people in the provinces, and we have appointed service providers in the provinces to assist them with dealing with the issue of backlog, and we've initiated 7 environmental management frameworks in district municipalities and in metros. And we are at that time continuing work on the development of the system on national environmental authority system, which will basically be a national system where we are able to track at any given time what's happening with EIAs nationally. And we've created quite a few guidelines. Those are listed there, Chair, on slide 24. I'm not going to go through on the next slide. Green Scorpions, Honorable Mukwen. At the end of the financial year, we had trained 890 members, and 798 of those were designated nationally. That includes national and provincial designations. Everybody's now got an ID card. We've got a brand rollout. There is a particular uniform that Green Scorpions now wear. And we've also extended the training and workshops. Let me call it a workshop, because in terms of the judiciary, they've got independent, so we don't want to train them, but we had workshops for 90 magistrates to help them with understanding of our laws and how we work. And we rolled out specialized training in forensics for the EMI. And we finalized a tutor manual on environmental related crime. We have an amendment bill that went through the committee recently, which will basically expand the mandate of EMI to include the ETA and APA. And achievements in this regard, we have launched 2 strategic sector-based national compliance and enforcement projects, 11 new dockets and major investigations opened, and 6 have been handed over to the National Prosecuting Authority. We've had 1 criminal conviction and sentence for pollution crime, and we've issued 14 administrative notices for non-compliance. We are finalizing the waste bill in front of the committee. We also finished that process last year. We published the tire regulations for public comments. We have draft agreements for the paper and plastic industry. And the finalization really of this, we wanted to do this then in the framework of the new legislation. And that's what has affected the delay. And we also published the asbestos regulation. We have internally looked at the management plan. Members would recall there was an amendment about 3 years ago where we moved the landfill permitting function from draft to ourselves. We are now responsible for issuing permitting, and we've also done an audit, which I think at a separate briefing we could do maybe next year, the findings of the audit. Because we looked at, especially at the municipal level, who's being serviced, what's the rate of backlog. So we now have an understanding of what the current state of affairs is with regard to the waste management and collection in the whole country. And we've mobilized resources for 4 maturity and secondary asbestos cleaners, and the AFP African stockpile. And think National Implementation Project that I'm now policy then in terms of the air quality, which is still continuing with program 2, we've done a strategy for the air quality priority areas. We declared last year the first national priority area, which was the Vaal Triangle. We are now in the process of identification of the second one. In fact, it's almost, we just need, in this year we will still declare that. And we've now put in 6 monitoring stations in the Vaal, and that those 6 places is where those 6 monitoring stations are. Next slide, please. And we've got a priority area governance committee, which has stakeholder representation. I've already spoken about the high salt as the next area. And we've done some work on the 3rd greenhouse gas emission inventory. And we continue to have air quality makosha. We had one last week. But last year we had the first one. And we are in the process of finalizing the long-term mitigation scenario process. And it's got quite a lot of stakeholder participation internationally, which will now in future be part of Program 6 for purposes of this report under Program 1. We have continued to participate in a number of forums, Chair, and I'm going to try and move very fast here because I think it's most of the things are within our strategic plan. And just to say that last year, in Cape Town, July, we hosted the GEF Assembly, Global Environmental Facilities, last year, and it was quite a successful conference. Next slide, please. And basically, Chair, all of those continue. Just to make a point on last year, we also hosted the ministerial endeavor at the Kruger National Park in June 2006 as a follow-up to the Greenland dialogue. And basically, I mean, it's part of the whole process of trying to move the climate change debate, and we continue as a country to play an important role in terms of moving the climate change debate to the next slide. From a resource mobilization perspective, Chair, we have, this was not quite deep technically, but we're part of the EU multi-annual indicative program. And that program in its totality has got about 980 million euros, but the environment is not quite all of that going to us, but we are part of the funding. And we have to continue the donor program with the Norwegians that covers most of our environment portfolio, including fisheries, and we've got 40 million now up until 2010. Of course, the Norwegians want to review the terms of this funding moving forward. And we have also a cooperation with Denmark, and we've got about 250 million over the next 5 years, and a lot of it is going to an urban environmental program. We work with quite a few municipalities in terms of rolling this out. Finally, Chair, I think I want to move fast, very fast, that we have basically finalized, we have done all our planning and reporting as we require to, and we've also done work with the provinces at the time of producing the report, at the time of finishing the strike plan, the annual report, end of the financial year. We have done some work in terms of the IGFR and the provincial budget structure. Where we stand now, we have finalized those, and they are with the Ministry of Finance. But as of end of 31st of March, those are still work in progress. And basically, in terms of internal transformation, we spent 49% expense on BE. And this is still lower than 2005 and 6 year, which was 57%. But our target last year we had exceeded the target, but this year we're still on target, which is 40% due to high demand in professional services. And what has happened, Chair, if you see, most of the work that we rolled out last year was mainly in Program 2, from a professional services perspective, and technically that's the sector that we have limited. Really, we struggled to get players in there. And those we work around air quality management, greenhouse inventory, all of those is very difficult to get. But we are still working on ways of increasing the amount that's being spent. We've got a new BEE policy that looks at addressing this specifically. Next slide. Internally, we now have, in terms of stakeholder relations, we have myself and the DDGs meet twice a year. We meet key environmental NGOs. We had interest in terms of the worksite uptime and interest in traffic volume in terms of our website by 19%. We've created in the last year website visitor feedback mechanism. People are using it, and we're still developing the customer satisfaction index, and we finalized by the 31st of March a master systems plan, which is a requirement that it's an issue that was raised in the previous year's Auditor General's report, which we complied with by the end of the financial year. Those are the figures, Honourable Chair, for interns, bursaries, full-time bursaries. All of that has been achieved. Next slide. And we are now 46% women, which is on target. We've achieved 79% black staff members, and our target was 72. We reduced the vacancy rate slightly from 30% to 25%. We reduced turnover rate from 18% to 15%. But the challenge, Chair, that I think I must raise at the bottom here, is that I think we do have a challenge in terms of SMS turnover. We are managing to keep people in the department, but we are struggling to keep at the top senior management services. Mainly we lose them to other government departments. There's a lot of mobility between government departments, but some of them do go to the public, to the private sector. But if there's an area I think that we're worried about, is the turnover at our level, especially corporate affairs. We've had two DDGs in corporate affairs in the last year, and we've got an acting DDG already. So that's one of the challenges in terms of SMS turnover. Next slide, please. And Chair, really, some of that stuff is self-explanatory. Let me just say that just on finance, we achieved a 99% expenditure. I'm going to come to finance just now. Next slide, please. And we continue doing work in terms of the staff wellness program. We have an HIV and AIDS program. And we have also been doing some work as part with staff in the department are doing some work in the communities with us. Last year there was donation in a hospice in Artichville, and staff members went out to repaint the Philadelphia School for the Blind and social workers. Next slide, please. The EPWP program, Chairperson, those are the jobs that were created, and those are fairly in line with our targets, as I said, as they were set out in our third plan. I'm not going to go into the details of that. Finance, quickly. Unqualified audits, no matter of emphasis. There were other matters raised. Those are basically that we don't do risk assessments regularly enough. And also there's an issue raised, there are concerns about human resources management, the fact that we've got a 25% vacancy rate. Our view is that we have brought the vacancy rate down. The reality is that there is a state of mobility in terms of skills and in the public service, and that we're not the only department that is faced with the challenge of human resources management. The audit committee, which is fully functional, agrees with the recommendations or the conclusions of the auditor general in terms of the financial statements, and they signed off and they thought that the audit committee, they also the requirement, they need to say that they feel that it fairly represents the state of affairs in the department and the performance of the department. Next slide, please. Just in terms of money, this is how much we received. The budget figure share is basically how much we received and how much we spent and the variance. But in essence, we spent 99.93% of our budget in the last year. And next slide, please. Thank you.
Thank you very much for a comprehensive presentation. I think both annual report is quite interesting and interesting. The light is that we won't have enough time for the advisory forum. I think that's the thing, the advisory forum report, and then take all of them together. Would we have that report?
Thank you, Chair, and honourable members of the Portfolio Committee. While they are getting the sign up, I'd just like to introduce myself. I'm John Major. I'm the Deputy Chair of the National Environmental Advisory Forum. Our chairperson, Kongeka Njobi, had a very important board meeting at the CSIR today, so she asked me to come down and present. Next slide, please. We're required to submit our work plan. We have already submitted our annual report, which went in August 2007. Next slide, please. The mandate of the forum is laid out in the National Environmental Management Act 187 of 1998. Next slide. Our role is to advise the minister, inform the minister, respond to ad hoc requests from the minister, and draw the minister's attention on the initiatives. I don't have a hard copy. Is there one available? May I continue, Chair? And then, right. The composition, NEMA says we should have not less than 12, but no more than 15 members. Members were appointed through nominations, and these were commented on by MECs and so forth. Currently, we have 14 members of the forum. Next is the composition. Organized, labor, business, as you can see there, 6 categories. Next one, please. Let me introduce you to the members. Max is from SASOL. Andre is from the National Business Initiative. Malcolm is from the Wildlife and Environmental Society of Southern Africa. Tony Frost is the former chief executive of WWF South Africa. Ari is with the Quadriplegic Association of South Africa. Thabo is from the Environmental Justice Forum. Josephine is from the Ngobili Women's Development Organization. Becky is from COSATU. I work for myself as a consultant. Zarina is from Drift University. Miriam runs the African Center for Biosafety and has a great interest in GMO. Kungeka is with the CSIR Group Executive. Angela is with the Legal Resources Center. And Wuyiswa is from the National Youth Commission. So you can see this forum is quite diverse. Term of office, members are appointed for 2 years, and the current forum members, their term has been extended for 1 more year in order to complete the activities which they've already started. We require to have at least 1 meeting a quarter. Next slide shows that we have 6 meetings, and these are briefly described as to what is covered at those particular meetings. As required by NEMA, NEMA has spent quite a lot of time setting up the way it works. We've had to draw up a constitution, an operational guideline, and we've been working on a work plan for 2007 and 2008, which has been developed as part of a larger process of consultation with the Minister and with the Department. The approach to implementing this mandate is we've had to feel our way because the forum is outside of government, so we have the Minister and the forum is hosted by the Minister, but the Minister has his departments and they obviously have ways of working. So we have to develop a relationship with the Department that does not conflict in any way with the Department's relationship with the Minister. One of the things that we've been trying to do is identify activities for the forum which fill gaps which aren't being covered by the Department. And quite often you find that there is overlap. Somebody in the forum would say, we've got a bright idea to do, why don't we do something else? And you find out the Department is already giving attention to that. And in order, because the forum members are all part-timers, it was decided that in order to provide the required quality of advice to the Minister, that we would need to bring in additional experts and consultants to look at specific fields. Okay, in consultation with the Minister, on our very first meeting with him, he expressed his views on the areas where he thought we should place our attention. And as a result of that, we've established four subcommittees, which are listed there, and a fifth special project, which is about mainstreaming the environment into an ether. Progress in 2006 and 2007 was around developing the work plan, tabling the first annual report, a workshop with our ether people to see what's going on, and a workshop on pollution and waste management. The constitution has been gazetted, and the work plan is in progress. Now let's have a look at that current work plan. Those four priorities have already been addressed, plus the ether project. Let's go to the next slide. Which simply reinforces the fact that the project and the work that we've done have been refined by input from the Minister, the Deputy Minister and senior officials, the DG and her official, at a meeting of the 27th of June 2006. Terms of reference were circulated and the DDGs responded to these because our procurement of that expertise goes through the Department, obviously. Okay, the project plan, the focus of the Biodiversity and Biosafety Subcommittee has been to develop recommendations to the Minister on public participation in the context of the regulation of GMOs. Okay, this is dealt with more in detail in the printed report. Where we are at the moment is that we are going to be workshopping the discussion document on the 5th of November, and the recommendations coming out of that will be concluded by the end of the current year. Under the next slide, coastal and marine management, working with the relevant government department, NEEP is trying to look at effective alternatives for small-scale fishers. The status there is that we've been in a tender process to get specialist advice on that. In terms of energy and climate change, which is on the next slide, the area where we thought we could make a contribution is to try and lay out for the Minister an overview of the obstacles and barriers to renewable energy. Now, energy is one of those strange areas where the government responsibility resides with the Department of Minerals and Energy, and yet the activity of generating electricity has enormous environmental implications. And so there's quite an overlap there between the different ministries. South Africa wants to introduce more renewable energy, but we have barriers to this. When one sees the take-up of renewable energy in Europe, for example, which gets far less sunshine than we do, it's quite remarkable. Germany's uptake of photovoltaic electricity at the moment is phenomenal, and that is because government has put steps in to make it attractive for people to invest. They also have what they call the feed-in law, which means that if you can generate electricity because you won the lotto and you put solar panels on your roof, you can feed it back into the municipality and they will pay you well for your electricity. So we hope that this document will lay out the opportunities and that the minister will have dialogue about that, because as I said, the environmental implications of electricity generation will be more. Feed-in law. I know government is looking at it at the moment, but Europe has certainly got this, and it's really paying dividends because you've got this investment into renewable energy. Under pollution and waste management, a workshop was held in 2006 at the airport with a number of experts as well as NEEF representation, and they looked at air quality and they looked at hazardous waste. Carrying on with that one, they have sent recommendations from the workshop to the minister and he has referred them to his department. And there are a couple of points which are laid out there which was highlighted by that particular meeting. And one of the things that did seem to be highlighted was it seems that government doesn't want to specify in terms of technology, for example, a particular air quality monitoring machine. And so you get a situation where, although you're setting standards, there are different kinds of machines available and analytical processes. And this committee feels that it's important to go into that technology and to sharpen that up. The next one actually has developed since the formation and wasn't initially something that the minister said he wanted the forum to look at. But looking at the ESA program, which is a very ambitious economic development program, looking at 6% growth, looking at enormous job creation, what seems to be left out of the ESA story is the environmental limitations. The limitations on resources such as water, agricultural land, and the forum felt that we could make a contribution here. And so a workshop was held which involved the Deputy President's office and where ESA resides. And we can go to the next slide, please. We had people from DTI and so on and so forth, and the sense there was that we really need to try and mainstream some environmental consideration into ESA, because if we look at all the power stations that we want to build and all of the infrastructure and the factories and all that sort of stuff, the cumulative effect of that on resources which are already scarce, such as water, would give one cause for concern. And so we're hoping that this program will result in the environmental components being mainstreamed into it. Can you go to the next slide?
Yeah.
And the recommendations that came out was that there's a need for dialogue around ESA and drawing in the environmental and scientific community to assist. There are risks for ESA in not taking the environment into consideration. And there's a need to kind of, that last bullet point, to develop specialized skills in the area of restorative environmental science. In other words, rehabilitating our coal mines when we've taken the coal out, so we can restore that to agricultural land. And the management of environmental impacts arising from these very big projects. The information that has gone to the minister includes the annual report, a report on the workshop proceedings, and a summary of the ESA workshop that we held. Our recommendations to the minister include that he consider and note the work that's being done by the forum. The subcommittee on pollution and waste management put in the results of their workshop, and we have recommended that the minister endorse further engagement with the Deputy President's office regarding ESA. We now come to the budget. The budget for 2006-07 was 1.2 million. Total expenditure was 310,000 odd. Budget not allocated was a fairly big chunk. And the chairperson has asked me to explain to the honourable members that was because of the delay in procuring the consultants and experts, that the money could not be spent in that financial year. Okay, the next one. Looking at the budget for 2007-2008, a total budget is proposed of 1.189, and the various breakdowns in operational budget and subcommittee budget are given there. By way of conclusion, Honourable Chairman, we have really been doing basic establishment work for quite a long time to set up and establish the forum. We then started in 2006-2007 to start looking at procuring additional experts, and this took time because of the process that we had to go through to procure them. And we had to feel our way because there's been a bit of a lack of clarity about what the forum does, what the department does. The forum should obviously not overlap with what the department does. In the old days, there used to be a council for the environment. We ended up doing the work of the department, and that is clearly not a desirable kind of situation to be in. To conclude, next slide, please. We believe that the forum is a valuable component of the whole national environmental government system. There is expertise amongst the members. The success of this relationship depends on how effectively we link with the minister and his department. And there's a two-way thing. The skills they need to be utilized if we're going to be successful. To finish off with then, Chair, the people, Kungeka, the chairperson, myself, the deputy chair, and then the four heads of the subcommittees, Angela, who heads up the Waste and Pollution, Miriam on Biosafety and Biodiversity, Tony, the Marine, and Andre, Energy and Air Pollution. The contacts, those are the subcommittee chairs. And then finally, we have been fortunate. To start with, we had great problems with administration and getting secretarial assistance from the department. But I'd like to thank the DG for giving us Emery Otto, who works out of the office of the Chief Operating Officer, and she provides us with excellent backup and secretarial assistance. Thank you.
Thank you so much,
Mr. Roger.
Thank you. Thank you very much, again, for a very interesting presentation. I'd like to invite, but before I do that, why invite you over to comment and raise questions? I think it is proper that we should commend the department for the good work that people are doing. Also, for me, what is important is that indeed there is a time of clean happening in the department, and we are seeing the attempt for the IT department to look at some of the issues that we're raising. And not just to ignore it. And I think that's a very important one of the terms. Yeah. Can people raise questions or comments? Or someone? I think I'll speak here. Someone I can see.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a couple of questions to the DG. And also congratulations on a very useful and comprehensive report and delivery of the report as well. On page 16, it's very really useful to have the pages numbered, which I know that for the forest report, the pages aren't numbered, which makes it a bit tricky to comment on the actual, you've got to stretch through the whole of the report and find the one you want to comment on. Just around the issue of the marine aquaculture policy, and maybe we'll hear more about this at a later stage, but we did an oversight visit looking at various aspects of marine aquaculture policy recently, And there does seem to be a tension between the Department of Agriculture, the Department of MCM, as to who is the controlling body. Because clearly it is, in fact, agriculture, it's farming to a large extent, but at the same time, the product that you are using, it belongs to the marine environment. So I just wondered whether that is, if we could get a bit of clarity on that one. And then I would also like to ask, this also has to do with MCM, to get a bit more information on the Antarctica program. What is happening with the SAS Agalas? Is the Antarctica program on track? Or are we looking at changes as far as the program is concerned and the management of the island, and but in particular, the amount that needs to be spent on a new vessel that will take the place of the SAS Agalas, which I understand is reaching its sail by date. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Marcella. I'll take a question and then go to Morgan. This is to the historic state of mind. I'm a little more concerned about the point of entry. We all know that there are syndicates operating from the airport who will follow visitors to their actual destinations, and that's where the crime is actually taking place. Now, the question is, are we working in collaboration with National Intelligence to make sure that we have people who would make sure that none of our officials are involved in this kind of operation? You know, because it's a chain. Somebody, somewhere, feeds information to someone to say, hey, there's a big fish coming. You know, you have to track this down, whatever, and so forth. So I think that is very, 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 very important to have special emphasis at the point of entry to make sure that we do have intelligence that would counter what is happening as far as that is concerned. And second question to that is on tourism as well. The challenges that you are saying with the FMME in particular, that our people are not really clued up with the system. Now my question is that is the system set up in such a way that when the time of lust is about to approach, then these people attend the reminder notes? I think that would sort of assist to make sure that they are not caught, you know, caught in a situation whereby they are contracted lust and there's nothing else that they can do about it. Whereas if you send a reminder note, then sort of conscientize them to become a little more proactive then.
Morgan, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Thank you for the briefing, DG. Couple of broad questions, and then some more specific ones. Firstly, let me get my knee question over. Thank you, Dr. Ledger, for that presentation, and indeed the work which you've chosen to concentrate on. Do you, as a forum, also take requests from stakeholders? So, for instance, I understand that you are a panel of experts representing various interests, and you've said you've brought in other consultants and so on, but do you generate your key areas of focus, which you then pass on recommendations to the minister yourself, or can, you know, NGOs also write to you and request, or at least lobby you for specific research and subsequent recommendations. And if that doesn't happen, that doesn't happen. Second DTG, to you. I'm interested in or noting the findings of your most recent State of the Environment report, which noted a general decline in the state of South Africa's environment. Whether the department has or is planning to do any more strategic environmental assessment of the type, for instance, that you commissioned for the Wild Coast, because they are presumably, which was a very good assessment. And may I say that our interactions with some of your officials in the Ghana was very, very good. Really talented, dynamic, particularly young people working there. But I'm interested in other ATAs, particularly, for instance, whether it might be on the cards to perform a strategic environmental assessment for the Mpumalanga Hartle, with regard to what seems to be like a significant proliferation of open cost coal mining, licenses running into thousands, and in certainly one or two cases, even licenses being awarded in protected areas. Thirdly, and I actually want to ask a lot of questions on marine and coastal management today, but I'll ask this one for now, and hopefully the chair will give me another round. I'm interested in generally in comments on the capacity of marine and coastal management at the moment, particularly with regard to responding to permits for rights holders in time for the various fisheries opening. So, for instance, the South Coast Rock Club, the fishery opened on the 1st of October, and not the permits weren't necessarily on time. West Coast Rock Club, the Zone A, opened yesterday, permits not on time. I hear that your computer systems last week were down for several days. What is the problem here? Are the permit holders not compliant, or are there particular problems with capacity in marine and coastal management in order to respond to what seems like, and I don't want to say glibly, fairly routine procedures with regard to issuing permits to people who already are legitimate rights holders? Thank you.
Yes, sir, listen, I share your compliments to the if you cover the problem of the traditional performance, and relating to the fact that when there is a tourism conference, I'm also complaining about this, that the NEC now, you'll be here in the field that the core province of the field that you want to have the sort of the Kevin Dent, the Western King, and Malaka, and then the other ones that you have. Isn't that part of the problem in terms of branding and so on? That the NEC sort of action becomes absent as a sort of the content itself. I can't believe it. Now, how do they hope that they can be developed in the front? Yeah. Now, yeah, the minister will have to come out of that when it comes to the thing like that. It's unacceptable. We, MPs, can go there now and see. We will observe it and see. In terms of our oversight, on the other side of the MPs, so they can show that accountability. Now, when it comes to, let's see now, the annual grading period, this thing is too short a period for SME. If I set up an SME now, the B and so on, the current year of the grading, this thing is time consuming because you might not have, the capacity to have all these people to go around and check all these people, especially when the thing is coming to the next time. I'm just thinking about the 2 year, the 1 year, the annualized grading system, I think it's still too short for any efficient monetary measure of grading and so on. Just a thought. MCM, the Marine Development Regional Fund, you reported that you corrected many of the problems of revenue there. Now, the question that is fundamental is,
your suggestion is better to sort of come back here. The marriage is a new patch. Let me brought back and use the metaphor of the sucks back into the bed of cheek. So it doesn't stand there as a standalone. Doesn't exist as a standalone, so it's not come off. But so it should become an organic branch of deep itself. And it will be integrated with all other things. Perhaps even like a public utility, such as, small additional condition. Instead of it existing as a trading account, it only gives the revenue for Trinity for the sources. If people comply, then there's no reserve revenue coming. So then that can be sustained. It cannot be a Trinity thing. As the chapter 2 says, it's a perverse incentive. Use the communist parlance. Equity, program on air quality. I'm just intrigued by the fact that you've got these French quotas. That we asked them, they should come and see what they're in support. Now, the valve. Is a shop, is a hotspot, kind of identified as a hotspot. Don't you think that it's a good idea to have a summit in all these hotspots that have been identified, especially with France? It's okay to have monitoring system in terms of position of the environment, but in order to mobilize community support, don't you think the public awareness, so depending on all the people in the area, all the NGOs, and say, here we're going to have fun, and this is what we are trying to do. So you can put in the hospital and the number of other NGOs there, and in that way, you see, you don't have the military system satellite above the heads of the community, but the community actually understands the fact that they're doing something about that. They don't consistently say, nobody's doing anything about this, whereas you've got a good scientific military system above the heads. So, like, quickly, we went to Uganda. About the people of Serbia. Two quick points. Number one, the EU funding. You spoke about international funding programs. That's all we said. And you say that there are more money. But then the main question is still the EU funding. And the problem was laid at your door. That it is these that must account to this protocol about the 11 million euros. That's what the EU they said, no, we are the next party here. So we had told that there is some party coming from a different era to put mine instead of a machine to make it into space to operate. Now, many of the same people are running around in 4x4 and staying in 4x4. We don't know anything. If we let this aeroplane money here, so you for sure control us. We as the next party will completely polish. The same thing for the bank. Now, we then said we're going to ask you this petition, so please give us a couple of issues. But the thing is, we have little participation on the ground. People are so bitter there, and this thing is the same on. And another point I want to put you, we delegated the mandate to lead at the delegation day. We went to a lovely sponsor. There's a nature conservation park. Very lovely country. Sorry. Zuzuma, the second smoke. Zuzuma. And it's a clean area for tourism, etc. But today the king was open. They need a bridge, they need the pure water for the fishing plant. But what they need better is the electricity. And it's going to take a long time for them. So we undertook, we're going to ask, write a letter to the minister to say, please. Put aside a little bit of money, I don't know how much the generator is, just as a meeting, to buy a generator with searching and electricity cost. Europe is going to start, they're very hard, and it's going to come there, right in the center. So that's a big generator for the year. Hey, let's not hold the home of the stage. Let's not hold the stage.
Thank you for that lapse of wisdom. Could we have one longer?
Chair, thank you very much. Chair, I'm interested in the question of medicines. I would like to know the criteria in which these environmental magistrates are trained. Are they trained differently from criminal, those who are judging criminal issues, or are they the same magistrates who can now be used to judge environmental issues? Or is it a new career of magistrates that are coming in, and if they are going to be trained as magistrates, what standard of education is needed for that training? Thank you, Chairperson.
Mr. Sulu, the last one in this round, and then we'll take another round. I'll start with you, Mark Kalala, in the next round. One more is, you still have what, an hour and a half.
Chairperson, I would like to know what the department will do with this poachers, ambulance poachers on the South Coast. I mean, I believe so young children walk out with diving suits into the streets and go poaching, abalone, and nobody's doing nothing to stop this. And then I would like to know from the department, from the MCA, how many legally quotas it was applied to black economic empowered people. How many quotas is still in their hands? Because what I believe is, we went to PE the other day. We spoke to about 17 soldiers. Empowerment companies, and from that 1714, three were still in the possession of their quotas. Somebody wrote me a letter from Fort Nolop, the other day, Chambers, and in this letter, at least now people from the poor areas, they wrote to me and they said to me that they had a quota. And some guy took their quota from them. They got no income now at the present moment. What they got is a lot of debt. They were on this morning they were on the way to Cape Town. Now I would like to know, how many of the real owners of quotas still are in possession of the quotas? Thank you, Chair.
I will answer some questions and my colleagues can pick up in the areas that I have left. Honorable Chairman, on the aquaculture policy, one of the things the policy seeks to do is to distinguish the role of aquaculture and from deep. Basically, I mean, the agreement that they regulate freshwater aquaculture and we do marine aquaculture, but Dr. Mayer, if I can give you further details on that. Antarctica program, we have now for 4 years in a row been requesting a budget. Every year we go to National Treasury and ask for the replacement of this vessel. Last year, 2 years ago, they asked us to go and do a PPP. We went to do a PPP. We came back, and then they said, PPP review as opposed to acquisition. It came back, and then offered basically, either way, it's not going to be necessarily beneficial if you go the PPP route. They then asked us to go and do a strategic justification of the program. Why should we continue doing Antarctica research? We have last year appointed a panel, an international panel, to look at our program and do a review. They've just finished their report, which basically recommend that you continue with the program. There's a whole lot of recommendations, including what travel research that we do, institutional mechanisms and things like that. And we are in the process of studying the report, but in essence we have also this year requested and submitted the draft report to National Treasury. Hopefully we would be able to get something in terms of the new budget, but it is a challenge moving forward in terms of what happens if we don't get the SAR gallons that is not insurable. And that's basically a challenge. I mean, the report itself raises quite a few options. One of them might be to see whether we should be looking at Airlift as one of the ways to get logistic support to the basin. But in essence, in terms of the future of the program, we are very confident working with EMC that the justification with an international panel that did look at it. The practical implementation does have a few things that we need to look at, including a recommendation that they say maybe the Agalas route might not be the route to take. That may, like a vessel that does logistics as well, maybe what is the route you should be taking in a research vessel. And all of those things we're looking at. I'm hoping that we will be able to resolve this matter. We've had all the negotiations with Treasury. I'm hoping that we'll be able to resolve. At official level, we almost resolved it, but obviously decisions on allocation of budget are not necessarily taken to official level.
Just to say that this is an extraordinarily important program. I think particularly now with climate change and all of the issues that are coming to the fore, and I'm sure that we will have a chance to discuss it in our own committee, and there may be a need for a political backing to what you are submitting as well.
Then, Honourable Maluleke, on the issue of the ports of entry, we sit in the, what is a structure called a Border Control Committee, Coordinating Committee, which is made up of a number of departments that have got something to do with border control. It's part of the JCPS cluster. So the short answer is that we are part of the process that looks at security and management of that in the course of entry. That was the question. And then on the issue of notifications, I think on grading, I would ask my colleague Sinison Sumaya to answer that. And then on Honourable Morgan's questions on the, I think I will farm all of those out to, I think you can answer the first one on NIF, and if you wish to answer the FEA question, and Dr. Maiki said to answer the right holder question. With regard to the issue of Honorable Mukwena's question, I can only talk at official level, that we try and make sure that provincial officials do attend the meetings. And I don't want to comment on the attendance or non-attendance of anything, for obvious reasons. let me say this though. I think some of the challenges I know that officials have is that sometimes the portfolio in the province, it's a wide portfolio. In some provinces it includes tourism, economic development, and sometimes it's just very difficult to be at all of these.
I know you cannot be at all of what are the number of global organizations for each of the year of policy and the tendency that should be able to
Well, we'll not convince it with the minister. Then on the issue of the MLRS, we had, I think, in previous briefing discussed this matter, and we had in our response to the Parliament resolution when Parliament received the report from SCOFA, had said that we were exploring this option of bringing, in fact we were exploring a few of, options. One was to bring it back, the funds back to the department. The second option was status quo, and the third option was a saving account. And we had, as a department, had taken a view that maybe we should look at bringing back to the department. And subsequently, we've had engagement with National Treasury, and they raised quite a number of options, and they thought bringing back to the department might not be one of the best options, and that maybe what we should be doing is to look within the context of a fund, what are the areas that we could tighten and manage better. And so we are in that process, Honorable Mukwena. We haven't quite resolved it. We had thought we had taken a view, but I think subsequent to the Treasury input, we've now gone back and started thinking about the future options. Once we've done that, we will then report back to the committee. The issue of summits, I think it's a very good idea. Chair, we will make sure we look at it in terms of our own threat plan and how we move forward on this with regard to air quality hotspots. And what we've also done, which is outside the reporting period, we've finished the National Air Quality Framework, which was published in September 2007. And in terms of that, there's municipalities that have been identified as either falling into the category of hotspot or potential. And what we intend doing is at least targeting those municipalities at the political level, have a discussion with the minister and the mayors, and obviously we would have to roll out from there with regard to either the areas that are not necessarily hotspots but a potential hotspot unless something happens. So it's something that's on the minister's program, and we will take it, program or agenda, and we will take it forward. I just want to comment on the EU funding. I think it's one of those areas of our work that probably that I can say on behalf of this team that we inherited. But let me add this. I think with donor programs, there's a few things that unless you manage the contracting period very well or arrangements, you run the risk of things that you are not in control of. I think it's correct for the municipalities to say they never chose the consultant. We never chose them either. Most of them were appointed by the EU, and some of them came from Europe to start. Two, the conditions of the program said we must use NGOs as implementing agents. So three NGOs were appointed to be the implementing agents for the program. Pondo Crop, Triple Something, Triple Trust, and something else. And I think in that process some things I think went wrong. And obviously the department should have played more oversight because we were still the reporting responsible for the accountability on the program. As a result, in some of the areas we've had some of the products, for example, if you look at something like the Amadiba hiking trail, I think it's one of the flagship programs in terms of what it's been achieved. But I think one of the areas that we didn't think about in designing the program was the post-care support, post-program, because you do need access to markets to continue to having the Amadiba hiking trail to continue in that area. But for me, it raises another question. I think on the one hand, there's an issue about supporting small enterprises and communities with regards to product development, making them successful businesses, and also facilitating access to markets. But there's a point where I think it's about the business itself, that a person must be able now to take responsibility and run a business. And it's finding that balance, providing support as government, facilitates access and continue providing support. But at the same time, the person must run, or the community must run a business. And we're not necessarily as government people that run businesses. And we don't necessarily have the skills to do that. But the question is, at what point do you then exit? And what's the package for exiting? And I think that's one of the areas that the program went wrong. Because we didn't think, I don't think in the process the department thought about aftercare. And that's one of the areas. There have been allegations of mismanagement of funds. We did an investigation and audit, which we couldn't find that. But there is, I mean, the reality is that I think for me, more than mismanagement of funds, it's the impact or the lack thereof of this particular program, and I think there's a number of areas where there's been I think we didn't think about it very well. But other programs for me that, like, I mean, because this program technically, apart from the way it's run, it's no different from the SRPP program that we run as a department. I think for me it was an issue about the way it was put together, and I think the department should have at the time insisted on more control mechanisms to be done by the department than with us. And probably that's one of the lessons. So the money has not been misappropriated. But it's not necessarily as visible either. So it's gone into processes, it's gone into workshops, there's been training on the ground. But I mean, things like training, you don't necessarily see it. It's not a visible thing. You can't really point out that this is training. But a lot of it went into community processes, including training. And in some instances, there were products like the Amadiba hiking trail. There was also some planning information that came out of that process. And
what is a good idea? Is it what is good information? Which makes sense to you? Put it in writing, just to reflect to somebody, change the issue, the sort of community engage on this, and after being to the people, said, so I didn't see the people are telling you that they talk shop, but we went there now. They were written this thing, and now all along we went there at the sort of community, but this time the business was the second parliament that we're taking, and the same issue arose. So by way of feedback, and giving legitimacy to the people's parliament, if you say, attention to the but the same community are identified by parliament to go there. Now we encounter these problems, and as a matter of measure of accountability, this is a big issue raised, and this is how we can see our response to them. We are only you know, the point here and there, et cetera, but for the whole issue, so that if this matter can be put to rest and we can some records, so next year or whenever we go, this issue should come up again. They must say, oh, you are here again, you know, and nothing. So I'm just saying to us, an executive summary is what you're saying, excuse me, that's number one. Number two, you are saying more money is coming out from the dark, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what protocol are you installing to make sure that this is not a repetition?
Thank you. Okay. I think the suggestion of we have, I've spent time myself on the Wild Coast, I've spent time with the municipality explaining some of these things, but we can write the report, but the reality is that people are still feeling afraid. The fact that this money, it's not, there's nothing much to show for it. And for me, I think that's more the fundamental complaint as opposed to explanation. But we can do the explanation. We can write a report as the Honorable Mokoena is proposing. But the question that people are asking, I think more fundamentally, is that where does this money go technically? And I think that's where they're looking for impact. They're looking for the fact that this was supposed to kickstart tourism in the area, and they're looking for jobs, they're looking for basically impact. And I think, I don't think at this stage we are in a position to demonstrate or report on that, which is the fundamental concern. But we can provide a report that will even give what the auditors did and what they said, what projects that we can still do.
Because I remember a few years ago I was there in Portugal on a bike there. I remember phoning the chief operations officer, saying, I can't see anything yet. Where is this money going? I couldn't find anything as well. So I'm not so sure whether should there be no people who are liable for criminal investigation. I think a matter like this, you cannot have funds that disappearing unaccounted for and no consequences. Mm-hmm. So I actually think that we must scale up our investigation around this. I think for me, it's quite difficult.
I'm just wondering, thinking out aloud, that perhaps is it not some of those grants which originate from Europe, intended for Europe, coming via Africa?
I mean, the strings, as my colleagues are saying, the strings attached, as I was trying to say diplomatically, that the way we negotiated this thing is that we shouldn't have allowed for some of this. We shouldn't have allowed for them to have final say who the consultants are. Choosing who the people that they work with, the implementing agents, the NGOs. This is not to mean that I've got issues against NGOs, but we work very well with NGOs, but it does not follow that all NGOs would have been in a position to implement such a program, or it does not follow that a proper due diligence was done on the particular NGOs that were chosen for this particular program. But I think we need to, I think I've heard what the committee is saying, we will prepare a report on our side. Maybe we would also identify areas that we think we, in future moving forward we shouldn't replicate. And that's basically what's been informing our own engagement with in terms of other donor funding. The issue of consultants, I think most of, I must be honest though, most of these programs and most of these donor support programs, they insist on their own consultants. There has to be one expert from the country that's giving the money, at least, and in some instances more than one. And we in constant battle with some of the donor agencies, in terms of some instances, I mean, even the rules that get used, you're going to have to fight and negotiate whether you use which auditor and things like that, that which rules in terms of procurement and all of that. And I think National Treasury has, in the, there's a process that we participate in National Treasury that begins to look at some of these areas where... I wouldn't think so, Chair. Because I think NIF has got a particular role. I left the question for. Because I mean, NIF is basically a forum that advises the minister on the issues that the minister might want to be advised on. I don't think that the issue of donor engagement for South Africa is an issue that is specific to environment, firstly, and secondly, I think personally it's a political issue to manage how you engage with the donors. You don't necessarily need technical experts to work on that. We've noted the question on Suzuma. We will look at it in terms of power generation. And then, but we will wait for the letter to the Buddhist. But we will, in the meantime, see what's possible from an official level. And then, Joanne can answer the Honorable Zanga's question on the magistrate. And the rest of the questions by the Honorable Judges can be taken by Dr. Mayuki. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. With regard to the issue of the strategic environmental assessment, the two things we're doing at the moment, the EPA sets up a process, it's essentially a process for looking at a long-term vision around environment and for doing a consultation. And what we are doing at the moment, though, is that we are in the process of publishing the EPA guidelines. So there's a document that is now out that can inform and be used as a basis for a range of organizations or organs of state with civil government to do EPAs, and they've now set a set of guidelines that they can use for this thing to do that. And I think that's now going to mean that the EPA will be more widely used. The second thing that we are doing is in a number of district municipalities as well as metros, we are doing what we call it environmental management frameworks, which in fact is our first next level down, which is using some of the EPA methodology, but with a lot more content and information to do an environmental management plan for a particular area, including looking at zoning, identification of sensitive areas, looking at what the carrying capacity of the natural resource base is in certain areas in order to be able to run those processes. And there I think that what we have done, the one area I think is the Dhoop, around the area of the Dhoop Dam. We are working with the Department of Water Affairs and Forestry to do quite a large EMF in order to look at how that development and its impacts and the changes it's going to bring to that area are going to be managed. And essentially there we work in partnership both with provinces and with municipalities in order to, and we set some kinds aside to respond to requests, and some of the provinces and some municipalities are doing some of their own initiatives. There's quite a lot of them being done in quite key areas of the country. In a lot of areas that are under development pressure are now starting to do these kinds of plans. Then can I just add on the question on air quality, which is that in areas that we've prepared hotspots, like the Vaal, and now the one that's coming up in the household, we do a management plan, and part of that is that we actually establish a forum for stakeholders in that area that brings together the community with industry, with with provinces and with the municipality in that area, and we do have that involved. But I think there is quite a lot more work to be done to popularize and to inform people about the work that is done. In relation to the magistrates, what we've done, they're not special environmental magistrates. What we've done is we've taken environmental crimes come in general to the normal court. And so what we try to do is to capacitate magistrates who hear environmental crimes to be able to have a better understanding of our legislation and the reasons for different things in the legislation, as well as also educate them about the potential consequences and impacts of environmental crimes. What we did is we run a couple of trainings with magistrates, but now the training materials that we use have been incorporated into the Justice College curriculum. So in order to become a magistrate, you've got to write, you've got to go and do a course within the Justice College, and in that course, they're going to this now module looking at environment, and the 10 prosecutors also go through. So we try to institutionalize the training for the officials and officers within the judicial system. I mean, our sense is there's quite a lot more to be done, but that it's certainly gone some way to build a better awareness than there was previously. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will begin with one of the chairman's question on aquaculture or marine aquaculture. Just to reiterate what the Director General said, that we tend to have two categories of aquaculture in the country. Aquaculture that is carried out in rivers and dams, which we term freshwater aquaculture. And that kind of aquaculture has historically been regulated by the Department of Agriculture. They have, in fact, in last year, produced a policy on management of freshwater aquaculture. And they have outlined what their priorities are. Parallel to that, we've had the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism historically dealing with marine aquaculture. In fact, marine aquaculture in this country started as early as about 1987, and it has down to been handled by the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. But what has happened, and I think that's where Paris attention comes from, is that some of the farmers believe that the process of application in order to get it right, it takes too long, and the reason is the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. I think that's a misunderstanding, because it is not. The major constraint in starting an aquaculture business is procuring land, and our department is not responsible for apportioning land. So I think that people are then associating that difficulty with the department. It is an issue that even in the present policy we're trying to address. How do we make sure that land becomes available quickly to those people who want to start farming? If I can proceed to one of the more general questions, which is that some fisheries started October 1 and there are people who do not have their permits. I have difficulty addressing this question because it is sitting on my desk. And I've asked him that I've asked that it be investigated so that we can answer the question, that the parliamentary question before. But as all of the members would be aware, when you apply for something, you do have the responsibility to put on the table all the required information. In other words, a delay can arise in cases where the applicant has not produced all the required documents and therefore we couldn't issue a permit. And there have been cases in the newspapers in the past few months where allegations of tardiness of the department in producing a certain document have been made, and when you dig deeper, you find that in fact it was because there wasn't all of the required information. The second issue I want to
I guess what I'm saying is I'll investigate this question and will provide the answer. But I do not believe Honorable Morgan is a capacity issue. I would suspect it's an issue of a technology issue, because we've moved to a new marine administration system. It is possible that the staff are not yet fully contested with the system. So it could be a combination of things, and we will provide an answer to that question. And then the Honorable Julius Abalone Poacher, including young children. Abalone poaching, Chair, is a big problem. It is a problem which we have been working on for a while. We've tried a variety of strategies. It just won't go away. And then they do use children, because children have a special, how can I put it? I mean, we cannot use the prototype children. So they do use people that are under 18. They do use people that are under 18, and they are middlemen, and they are the bosses, you know, who are relatively inaccessible. But the issue is that it is a very, very difficult problem for us to deal with, arising from two principal issues. One being that this is a very high value, it's sought after in the East, that's one reason. The other reason is that it is very accessible. It's very easy to go and get it. And therefore policing is extremely difficult. It is an issue, Chair, that I believe we have going to, as a country, have to take big measures for lack of a
Yes,
we've got to use the big thing. And we are going to have to develop with various stakeholders, including principals, South African police, because this is criminality, this is crime, this is something totally beyond fishery control officers. Fishery control officers can go this far, but when you've got a gang of 150 people getting into the water forcibly and intimidating and chasing our fishery officers who could be fired for free, it just says to us, this needs people with more power than we have. Yes. As far as the how many quotas have been sold by the original owners?
Excuse me, I'm not talking about selling here. I'm talking about rightful quota owners that lost their quotas through criminals. That's what I'm calling them. I'm calling them criminals because they didn't sell the quota. There's people that, you know, that's what, excuse me, you know, the disadvantaged people of this country are supposed to be empowered, right? Now, we give them quotas. And what happens? Then some clever lawyer comes on this side, first put that into the trouble, and then they come and say, look, I'm going to help you. Here's 30,000 for you to come out of the trouble. At the end of the day, he's controlling the quota. And the right to quota, we should think, you know, we saw a guy that are earning, they show us three papers. He's a quota owner. From the guy that took his quota. Somehow, I don't know how he got his quota. And in that three papers, he said to the chair, open the paper, you see how much in the paper. Not the blue chain was in the paper. He's working for another company, my doctor. So, but the quota owner, that is unacceptable in the news of Africa. I don't accept that. Thank you.
Chair, some of these individual cases we would like to investigate. So can I request the Honourable Member through you, Chair, that give us the information. You don't have to give the names publicly here, but give us the names so that we can investigate some of these cases.
Thank you, Gigi. Thank you.
Okay, fine. I think that's the thing to question. I think we'll come back to you, but I want to come back to maybe as I go through to the second round, the second month, the canal, and then I will follow.
Excuse me, Chair. There was a question from the Honourable Board Member. To you, Chairman. The question was, does the forum generate key areas of focus ourselves, and do NGOs lobby the forum to take matters to the Minister? The answer is yes, we do generate key areas of focus. Geetha was one of them. We also did a memorandum for the Minister on biofuels. The members of NEAT come from the NGO community themselves, and so they would bring things to the forum. But it's got to be debated by the forum, and we would have consensus on whether we take it through to the Minister. In terms of the forum being a place where the public can direct questions, this is an area where we have a degree of there's a contradiction, in fact, because NEMA says the forum shall inform the Minister of the views of stakeholders, but the Minister and the DG maintain that the Department has an adequate way of dealing with incoming issues and questions and so on, and they don't want to create another portal for that kind of stuff. So there is a bit of a contradiction. The DG might want to comment on that. I think in practical terms, because of the forum members being part-timers and all that sort of stuff, and already having taken on these various projects, I'm not sure that a flood of public concern or inquiries would be that welcome. In terms of NEMA, the meetings of the National Environment Advisory Forum are open to the public. Anybody can attend. But no, NGOs are not lobbying the forum to take matters to the Minister. Thank you.
Ms. Kalala?
Chairperson, maybe some of my questions have been partly answered. That is, coming to tourism, I'm happy to learn that domestic travel has improved drastically because it was our main problem. Though I remember, this is matters arising from the minute. I remember, I think it was 2004 when the short left was launched by DG. But now, I don't hear much about, I don't know whether it still exists or maybe it's something of the past, you know. I just wanted to know. And coming to our marine, I would like to know how active are the green scorpions when it comes to poachers. We are discussing abalone, that is, things are not going the right way. And just on tourism, I'm sorry to go back. I would also like to know the level of crime at this moment, because there were criminals, you remember very well, who were attacking tourists. For instance, you know, it happened so many times at the Table Mountain and other areas. I just wanted to know now the level of that. Maybe I don't hear much of that. And coming to air pollution, during the NIST presentation, near the NIF, there was something that I overheard, but I did not just grasp it correctly, about something has been mentioned about the government failing to introduce the name of the machine that would help introducing, you know, introducing some new technologies. But now, because I believe, really and truly, if some technology can be introduced, that the air pollution can just be a little bit controlled. I've seen it sometime when we went to Brazil, Sao Paulo, we saw there was some technology that was applied there, and it worked. People could see the pipes that were climbing those mountains, absorbing those chemicals. I was told you wouldn't drive through that area, but now the area was so clear, people were just happy. But now with the South African, when you talk to the guys, they tell you it's very expensive. They don't say that, but behind us they'll say, oh, what? Expensive. We're not going to do this. And when all the time when I go past the Gavin Club, I look at that money. I look at those Benzin what. You go to Secunda, you name them. It's terrible. Thank you.
Thank you, Master. Just a few questions as well. The question number of them are going to be fast. I can take my time. The first one is this issue of coal. Firstly, I think that as a department, I think we should be far more active in driving some of these issues than before. I think that the country presently is actually far more aware of the challenges of global climate change than before. And there's I think, an emerging societal consensus on the need to create a cleaner public development. So first I would like to know what are we doing around this challenge of coal. We've got almost under 30 years reserves of coal in the country, which is, you know, a dirty energy. What are we doing about it? Are we thinking about the thing of coal? What are the issues that are involved in that regard? Secondly, on this issue of GMOs, we had some issues with GMOs, and the matter of labeling came up. We commissioned a study proposed by the participants to address the issue of GMO labeling and the need to income country. What are the pros and cons of that part? But I'd like to hear what the department is saying on this. Because again, I think that the department is the custodian of clean development in the country, sustainable development, and it should be doing far more than what has been allowing to happen. And if you think that the department is going to be hated by other departments, don't you? This money is to be hated. It might not be enough. You should have given up for reason. You must have the thing that your mandate is that should be hated, because you are looking far beyond people's knowledge in terms of what is needed by the country. On page 13 under tourism, there's mention of the that there's been a school plan that's been developed, a new sector school plan that has been developed. And you also mentioned the TG that there was this board conference. I want to say whether in that conference was the hospitality sector present, where the hotels there, and there's the plan that we have the buying of all of the world. That has been seen, that has been given us problems. With regard to the tourism TEP enterprise program, I think that we need to broaden the mandate of the role of the city. This debate that we have been having in the AMC about the development of things demands more than what we've been doing as a city. It's not only creating an environment or awareness,
it's literally about there's an element of force feeding in it. Of course, it's not permanent force feeding, because you have to force people to walk at some point. But you do more than what the normal thing that are done. But I think that with the government to tourism, unless the state does more, tourism will continue to reproduce its present form. Okay? It will continue to be only being beneficial to white people. And then what are we doing here? I mean, if that is the case, then what are we doing here? Well, there are people who voted for us, and the majority of them are black, and the hope is that we will transform their life. So I think that I would hope that we will address the challenge of broadening the mandate of the CEC beyond just training, blah, 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 but actual effective work with enterprises, effective participation, looking at the circuits of what we call circuits of capital. Look at where the whole economy operates, and where the key points where money is being made, and ensure that deaf people are participating in those key points.
I think the same
I would say with regard to the marine and coastal management. I've raised this point about the agency for some time. The problem is that actually we are, some of us end up being this agency. And that is not my job, you know. Almost every week I meet fishermen. I'm always complicating Dr. Michael's evening on this and that. And I think it's unfair to him, it's unfair to me. We need an agency that's gonna, where this can go in, that can look. There's so much, all of these problems. I mean, this thing of what Mr. Phillips is raising is a real problem. People get the quota, they are cheated out of quota, and therefore what is the capacity of the state to protect them, to be involved with them, to direct that process, won't be going anywhere. So I, again, were raising this point that we need to talk about an instrument. This is what the development of is about. An instrument that will help people to benefit from the our Mandarin living environment. Then, the question of renewable energy. I think, again, we have to maybe take a far more stronger step here. If need be, we will request that the department help us to write a private member's agreement. So seriously, if there are problems with the department, we will have to hold the bull by the horn and write a private member's deal that is going to force a real debate in this country about renewable energy. Okay? And then let's have a contradiction. Because only that will because we cannot, I mean, in Germany, renewables have created about 300,000 jobs in 5 years. 300,000 sustainable jobs. In terms of the volumes of money that he has made, it's more than 80 billion euros. It is a lucrative industry. It is just beginning. It is just beginning. So instead of all the time, these are the wave of new technologies, Africans are the last to participate, or they don't even participate. I think that we have got to do something about this. So I'm partly inviting the department to comment on this point and to say that we want more. I think that there's the last point I'd like to comment on. Is on this thing of administration. This you mentioned, DC, that some of the work that you've been trying to control or to control was of such a nature that it has to be given to white people. Now, I hope that in the procurement process there was negotiation, so that you are not going to perpetuate the system where, because there are no skills, you reproduce the present pattern of our society. That if people get this contract, they make an obligation to the department of recruiting black people. Okay? And that comes part of the deal of the procurement system. Not just to buy skills for the first year. They must address the transformative problem that our society has. I think that the NEAF is a the important development. I really welcome it. But I would like to ask that if you could keep us abreast on some of the key decisions. I know that you're supposed to advise the minister. You can keep us abreast as well, so that we know what are the issues that are coming through. Last, what is happening with you, senior managers? Why are they doing it? You try to investigate this. But why are we losing? Because it takes a year to produce a Pamela Yagos. You don't want to you don't want to lose the skill that has been accumulated over the local capital. What is the problem? So I think particularly people who are still keen towards the public sector, when there's so much money in the private sector. So we have got to keep those partners in this. Mr. Van Melta and then Mr. Takatalia, and then to the Chamas who wanted to come in, Mr. Morgan and Mr. Van Melta. I think that would be the last round, so that the last remaining 20 minutes to the second round. Mr. Takatalia?
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for your submission, DJ. A few questions here, a few concerns. I think the first one relates to St. Lucia. Is an active environmental education program aimed at involving school children from the surrounding communities? The second question relates to HIV and AIDS, your HIV and AIDS program. I'm thinking of your policy and implementation of this program. Have you got enough resources? Have you got enough capacity? There are these questions of AIDS awareness, education, destigmatization, prevention, ECT and testing. Are there enough resources and capacity to implement this program? The third question deals with biodiversity. What is the state of the relationship between the department and the Department of Agriculture with regard to issues of GMOs? And does the department have sufficient scientific capacity to deal with the issues of GMOs and its related safety issues? Then there is a question of the IUCN, the IUCN red list. South Africa has 306 animal species listed in various threatened categories, and also various plants listed in these categories as well. What can the department do to prevent further loss of species? And the last question relates to national parks. Is there sufficient management capacity and enough skilled people to run these national parks? Thank you very much.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask Dr. Beecher, if the problem with the newly established forum is that the members are take office for 2 years and then they get an option of another 2 years, is there not a problem of them all finishing their terms at the same time? I know it happened with the Gender Commission where all of a sudden the entire Gender Commission had reached the end of their term except for the chairperson, and there was just no continuity, and I'd just like to ask them how they think they're going to address that. And then on page 20 of the report, and it comes into biodiversity and conservation, just want to know, what is a biocontrol agent? That's the one thing. Then I'm also interested to hear that Dr. Fletcher, committee, the forum, have produced a document on biofuels, because to me that is increasingly going to become a challenge as far as agriculture, but also as far as beef is concerned, because it's something that is happening all over the world with all sorts of impacts on the environment, and it may be too big a question to answer now, but I just would like to know maybe from the beauty what the thinking is on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The DG, Dr. Mike Issa, said
you know, we need big things with regard to abalone poaching. I certainly agree, but the need part made me worried because I wonder how many of those ideas you have already and are instituting. Mr. Chair, I think the effect of illegal harvesting of abalone goes far beyond this particular portfolio, this department, and it links into the very fabric of particularly Western Cape society, links to drugs and international crime. It's a massive job, and I realize the department has to do a lot more, so much more. But, you know, a couple of things. I mean, this department is barely making use of super ducks when forcing from the ocean. Your jet-propelled boats from your new large vessel, Bartman and Ruth First, can't operate in sea top bed where these guys operate. It can be seen from so many kilometers away that these poachers can laugh at you. Is there not an option for you to start engaging with some of our Navy servicemen and women to start working on this instead of sitting on the base all day, firstly, and, you know, putting a couple of big Browning rifles onto super ducks and going after poachers? Secondly, I do hope the environmental court is something that we can lobby for again, e.g. it was highly successful. Some big prosecutions, I think, are very, very important in this regard, and I was interested in your comments about that. Then also with regard to abalone poaching, I think there is, and my colleague Honourable McQuinn is on, but I think there is a perverse incentive here with regard to the sale of seized illegal abalone. Because we need to, there's need to put money into the Marine Living Resources Fund, you know, fine, and it should be used for the protection of marine living resources. But if it's not the case, and I hope it isn't the case, that there's almost an incentive not to catch the poachers in the water and before they take the abalone out, and rather to seize the abalone once it's out the water, to auction it, then to get money for the Marine Living Resources Fund.
In order to bring your son on.
It's a perverse incentive. I think it exists, and you know, I'm not saying it's any. It could be being done by some of your officials. The last part, I think, with regards to abalone, is that I think it will take significant will and I agree engagement with the SAPS, because I mean I don't have specific cases. Now and again, I do speak to legal abalone fishermen about this. But you know, there's always the contention, and I guess you always need proof, of cops who are on the tape in local areas with regards to notifying people of this. But my concern, DDG and Dr. Meyer, is that the minister has on two occasions this year threatened to close the abalone fishery. Now, there is science on it, I agree, and last year I think Zone A was closed. Despite the 6-ton quota from the scientific forum, it was said to the industry that it would not be closed, and then it was closed. My fear is that if you close the abalone fishery, the first thing is that the department and the stakeholders have not even done enough to stop poaching. So to then close the fishery undermines those who have legal rights. And secondly, you create a whole new sway of people who are disillusioned, who don't have quotas, who can't use it, and who then won't help you protect your own resource. And that is my fear, that if indeed it happens, which the minister has threatened twice this year, because the legal abalone poachers, only the legal abalone poachers, the legal abalone harvesters are some of the best people you can use in co-management. And the contention is that the co-management on the part of the department is very poor. It's a big issue, I understand, not from my teacher, but it does require a lot of will. Secondly, that's a narrow focus question for you, Mr. Yarwich and the DEG. And you probably don't regard it very high on your agenda. And that is with regard, and I've asked the question to the minister many times, and some of my colleagues have laughed at it in the House, and that is with regard to you using your position as department official to start offsetting your travel, including the minister, who I now have a fantastic record of his overseas travel, and I'll be very soon be telling him how many trees he should be planting.
Ms. Yawash can send her management inspectors to me, and I can verify that I'm carbon neutral now for the year 2007 entirely. In fact, we have the Bureau officials who happily travel to our meetings to tell us what the problems of climate change, to fly in on aeroplanes, to switch on lights, and do everything else. And I know we're not an annex one country, as the minister always says, oh, blah, blah, blah. But can't we, and can't you as a department, I'm certainly going to be in my position as Member of Parliament today, and I think we should as a committee as well, start offsetting our carbon emissions. You have sand that you can grow trees for you. Great big mahoganies and Caribs and Montanas and everything else. And it could be a fantastic project in order to promote it. And I realize offsetting is controversial, Madam DDG, because it does not, if the conscience of the polluter is, you know, well, that's offset as well. And indeed, you have to minimize your air travel, ultimately. But it is a start, and quite frankly, it is actually a serious topic. And I hope that you will engage it. And if you would like ideas from me, I'll have to share my carbon orders with you, which I also agree is appalling.
During our travel in London, when we had the People's Parliament there, it has been brought to our attention that there were people, about 12,000 Tamils, which were sitting with an official, and none of the applicants were responding. And it was rather strange to me, because if I make an application for a permit, it will be my business to follow it up and make sure that when they approve that application, I've got it. You can check with your department in that particular area as to what it was, but it has been brought to our attention. And I said to them, now, what method are you using to follow up these people? Because I'm sure when a person fills up an application form, he does have an address, telephone number, contact number or something, but it appears as though because there was a difficulty in trying to get those people. And the second issue is the challenges by the fishing industry in paying levies. Some of them are dragging their feet. I know it's not very nice to pay up. Now, what I want to know is, what have we got in place that would motivate these people to make sure that at least they come and pay for what they have caught? And if they don't do so, how hard are we hitting them on the pocket? Because the only time you can get anybody's attention is when you hit them in the pocket. Thank you.
Chairperson, thanks a lot. When we come to consultants, in some of the places where we had oversight, most of the projects that were incomplete were said to be due to the fact that most of the money goes to consultants, and very little money, nothing was left after the consultants had been paid. Now, here we are with the European funding, where monies were given to communities, and these communities are told who must be the NGOs that they deal with and who must be their consultants. As a country chairperson, how long are we going to continue doing that? Are the other countries dictating to us because we don't have enough money, we don't have money because they are funding us? Now, is there a way that the department can, you know, can do so that whatever money comes in should not just go in without the department knowing? Because now it is the department who are blamed for all that money that has been misused. and yet they were not consulted when that money was used. They were using their consultants. Now where are the consultants? Why can't they come up forward and tell us what happened to that money? Because now we are struggling to dig out and to find out what happened to the money. Please, Chairperson, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Short left is still there. We launched it again in August. And we ran an advert, and ran adverts in papers and in TV on short left. So it's still there. Can I suggest an approach, Chairperson? And that is, there's a couple of questions there about the factory of our entities, the Sandy, the Sand Parks, and there's also Saint Lucia. I've asked the question. You have them on your program tomorrow. Can I request that those questions be dealt with tomorrow when they are here? I know Dr. Mabunda is noting the questions sitting at the back, but tomorrow he will answer the questions of the incident in the Table Mountain and maybe with Christenbusch as well, which is part of the Table Mountain wall. Chair, but I think though the only thing that I would like to comment on is that we're not in a position to answer a question of the level of crime. We don't monitor the level. It's a role that SAPS plays, and the Minister of Safety and Security makes appropriate announcements. But what we can talk about is what we've done in these protected areas to try and minimize a level of crime or put more protection for tourists. And my colleagues tomorrow will answer that specifically. With regard to, can I just comment, I know the question was addressed to Dr. Ledger by the Honourable Chalmers about NEEF and tenure. I personally think that question is basically to the Minister, because NEEF is a body that advises the Minister, and I don't think probably it would help. I mean, the principle of continuity can be raised, but I don't think the committee itself should be answering whether they are appointed for 2 years. But we will certainly communicate to the minister concerns around continuity of these. Most of the honourable chair's questions, I think that we can continue discussing, and we agree with them on most of them. We can give technical answers, but I think the general trust. I think there are a couple of things, and I would bring climate change into this category. There are a couple of things that I think the country. And we have to find ways of dealing with it. The issue of renewables that you raised correctly, Chair, the issue of our own footprint in carbon offsets. And we started some work in the department in terms on a more small scale, identifying areas where we could look at energy savings. I think there's a little bit more to be done. I think we should explore those issues. We can only take the comments that members are making, and we go back and look at it. In that regard. Chair, on this issue of agents, it's something that we're thinking about. We will obviously explore the issue further at the conference that's coming up, but we have not forgotten about it. You raised it with us when we're doing the circular process. It's a list of things that's on our list. We have reviewed our BE policy this year, Chair, to address some of the questions that you are concerned about, which we're also concerned about. There is, I mean, some of the strategies that you wanted to, I mean, I think the other area, which I think is Parliament must engage with, is the issue of alignment in terms of the PFMA regulation and the code of good practice. Because in terms of, I mean, there are certain things that are illegal to do, like, oh, we've got an opinion from Treasury to all departments that you can't save such a fund in terms of your procurement. And it's, no, you can't do that in terms of federal regulation. And the question is really then how do you move forward in terms of the issue of broadening your PE. And our view is that there are areas where you should be starting to look at special sites, but we can't, legally we can't. I think that's an area of work that I think members can take with Treasury or the relevant committee within. But we have on our side to agree with you on the issue of we cannot accept the fact that we cannot fold our arms and say there is a challenge with regards to the challenges, especially in the areas that are more technical and we do nothing about. So we will take the comment. With regards to this issue of poaching, I can't agree with Members Morgan about some of the challenges. I think Honourable Morgan articulated it very well when he spoke about how big it is. And there's some work that this department can do. And but it's part of your national, the marine poaching, especially abalone, is part of the national crime prevention strategy. It's one of the priority areas. So in that regard, we do participate in as part of this. But I hate to say this, but I think the battle is getting tougher and tougher, and I think people have articulated this. And I think everybody, including us, is frustrated around this. And Parliament took a resolution, which is very difficult. I mean, it's a different process, Chair, that we can talk to you about. With regard to the scope of recommendation, the actual resolution that was taken by Parliament, that we need to now start doing a cost-benefit analysis of enforcement with regard to abalone. I mean, I think that can happen, but if we find it more expensive to do it, what are we going to do? If we find that the cost outweighs the benefit, do we say that it's too expensive to continue poaching? What do we do? But I think that's that we're supposed to answer that. Well, Parliament is resolved in that specifically. I think we will do what we can do. But for me, it raises issues of if you're losing a battle against criminals, what do you do? Do you go back and use resources to investigate the cost-benefit analysis, or you use your resources to strengthen your crime prevention efforts? But that's a debate for another day. The opening and of the fishery or closure of the fishery is something that's being debated in Cabinet. I'm sure in the next couple of days, tomorrow, we will probably hear what Cabinet's decision is on this matter. So before that, we unfortunately cannot comment on the issue of opening or closure of the fishery. But we note the concerns which have been expressed to us and to the minister by people, especially the current the right holders in this regard, and the concerns that they have with regard to poaching. We have dealt with the issue of Honourable Malego on this issue of paying levies. We have issues. Is it now Section 28? Section 28 of the MLRF empowers the minister and empowers the delegated to the DG to issue a non-compliance certificate. And if people don't do that, they don't honour that, there's further action to be taken, including the suspension of rights. We have this year, for the first time, I think in my tenure at least, suspended somebody from fishing as a result of non-payment. and we suspended their fishing periods and then as a penalty. When we have gone out and did a blitz, which we did twice this year, on non-payment, there had been, especially for the big fishing companies, there had been positive responses, which has helped the bank balance. But it's an area of work that we need to continue doing. We need to be more, and I think I take your comments, Honourable Malim, on us also being positive as opposed to just enforcing people to come and pay, and I think we will do that. Just on the last comment before I hand over to my colleagues on this issue of the poaching, I just want to make this point. I mean, I would be speaking on behalf of the departmental official. The majority thereof, if not all, that we it's not in our interest to encourage poaching, and therefore we do our level best to make sure that we catch poaching, and we will continue to do that. I think I speak on behalf of all our officials and our enforcement officials that their commitment is to make sure that there is, what our primary mandate is not to catch poachers. Our primary mandate really is to look after the rivers. And I think our officials or get people to, as many just women, qualify that. Because I think the fact that we're getting revenue from selling abalone that's confiscated is, for us, a by and by thing. But primarily, we do not want to be in that space. That's not our objective. Is what we want to do is to make sure that we conserve abalone. So that not for these current generations, but also for future generations. So I think, for me, we need to make that point, because I don't think as a department we derive pleasure in doing this thing, and we are committed that we will continue to do that. But where there's individual cases where they've been picked up, we will be open and to investigate those cases where people deliberately close their eyes or take 20 rand here, 50 rand here to allow this thing to happen. We will continue to monitor that, and we take a very strong stance against officials when they are caught to involve in this process. Can I hand over to my other colleagues? The minister works in as part of cabinet, so it is in his discretion to decide before he makes a particular decision whether he works with his cabinet before he makes an announcement or consults cabinet or gets cabinet's endorsement. You see, the thing is, whatever happens, it's got implications for way beyond. It's like this poaching issue. It's got implications. If, for example, he closes the fishery, it's got immediately direct implications for jobs, which is beyond our mandate. It's going to affect the economies around the coast, which affects provinces. So I think it cannot be, although legally the minister must make the decision, the implications thereof are much broader than what we do, which is why he on this issue has gone to cabinet.
Thank you. I think that the DG has dealt with most of the issues. Can I just say that on poaching, all the environmental, a lot of the environmental management inspectors are the people who deal with poaching, not necessarily in relation to marine poaching, but certainly in all the national parks, all the rangers, and all the law enforcement officers in the provincial park boards are all trained and designated environmental management inspectors. So those are the people who are doing that law enforcement, and doing it, I think, much more successfully than they were doing it because of the training that they've actually been given over the last couple of years. In relation to the issue around the air pollution, what we're talking about is not the technology that improves the quality of the air. The technology that we're talking about is the technology that we use to measure what the quality of our air is. And I think that there is a debate about whether across the country we should require a standard set of equipment in order to be able to measure air quality, or whether you should say the equipment that you use has got to be able to meet certain standards. That's what the debate is. Our view is that you've got a lot of municipalities, a lot of the private sector provinces have already put in and invested money in systems, and what we would rather do is have uniformity in terms of being able to know that the measurements are reliable and you're setting standards instead of saying buy it from this company or buy it from that company. And the debate is whether you should be doing that. It also would have a whole lot of financial implications if you were to say, well, you can't use the equipment manufactured by company A, you must use the equipment, this system, you must use that system. And I think that what we wanted to do, our approach is to say, let's look at what we've got as a network in the country and look at how we improve on it and link up and get a level of uniformity in the reporting and the results from it. So that's what the issue is. It's not actually about improvement technology. It's the measurement issue. I think just to echo what the DG has said, I think that our take on the issues around coal renewables and biofuels are very much through the climate change perspective, and in the long-term mitigation scenario planning that we're doing, in that research we've looked extensively at the potential for looking at new technology and technological innovation in relation to all of those issues in terms of its potential impact on climate change. In relation to carbon offset, I think that our department is using video conferencing, for example, a great deal more. We have a video conferencing facility between Cape Town and Pretoria precisely in order to avoid the cost we cut down on our delegations and the amount of traveling that our staff do in a Polynesian meeting, but in general we've tried to address that issue. I think the one thing about carbon offset, which is maybe another debate, is that everybody thinks about planting trees. But in South Africa, where we're trying to keep our grasslands, trees might not be the best thing. And our thinking is that there are a whole lot of renewable energy projects that, in fact, we should be starting to look at investing in renewable and alternative energy and local level community sustainable development projects in a much broader way than simply planting trees as a way to deal with carbon offset, because we could then possibly get a whole lot of really innovative things that people want to do off the ground.
The DG has covered the question that I would have to ask the chair. It's safe for me to say that the issue of environmental cost is an issue that is decided on the prerogative of the Department of Justice. So even though they may have been effective, it is the Department of Justice that takes the decision on whether we have a special court or not.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. I'll do the two quick ones on the biocontrol agent. There are only three ways of control. The mechanical one, actual removing the problem, or chemical control. On bio one, is the, when you introduce a parasitic species that will feed on the invasive one. One example, people will know of the introduction of the native red beetle some years ago, and also another bug that is used to control prickly pear, especially in the area around the Eastern Cape. That white stuff that controls that. Just a quick one on the issue of IUCN and the red data list. They are using broad indicators to come up with that whole species, and also they are using hard science. What we do as a country, we are doing a lot of stuff. One is the listing of species or ecosystems that need special attention, or develop regulations that will make sure that is controlled. We also look at those that are invasive. We list them at the same time. We also come up with control measures. And also link it to the National Special Budget Assessment that was done 3 years ago, where you also develop an expansion strategy for more greater areas. And also there are other programs that I use also to fight poverty. You're working for water, you're working for wetlands. Use the host of programs that you develop to make sure that the species are protected and increase the
structure. Okay, thank you very much. Others are the debate, we'll continue the debate, we'll take it to Polokwane as well, so that we resolve them there. Yeah, Anzanga, you want to say something?
Yes, Chairperson, I wanted to know where do these people report? There is a consultant that and the NGOs that are nominated by funding countries. Why did they report? Because they've got to report. And I don't think they report to the department. Now, where do they report? We are a country. And we are, we've got a constitution that we, you know, Chairperson, but if people can come in and say, here's money, and you use this money, but take this one and don't take this one. Take this one and don't take this one. How can we accept that, Chairperson? I want to know about that, Chairperson. How come that a funding agent can come from abroad and bring in money and tell you who to use for, how to use it?
Yeah, thank you, through you, Chair. The way in which donor funding is actually allocated and managed is negotiated between the donor country and National Treasury. If you will recall, in terms of the TFMA, all donor funding goes through the RDP fund, which is managed through National Treasury. And the way in which it's managed is determined by the development cooperation agreement between the two countries. And within that context, what the donors have done in the past is they've negotiated contractually with National Treasury, with South Africa, between the two governments, that they can apply their donor funding policies. So for an example, the USAID, 80% of a policy decision incorporated in the agreement is 80% of the funding should be used to employ U.S. Consultants and so on, not South African consultants. What National Treasury has done is that as they are now negotiating new agreements, they're taking the lessons, like the lessons from the past, and they're saying these things are now unacceptable. So for an example, we've just finished negotiating the EU agreement, and what's incorporated there is a much more thorough or greater system of controls that the South African government can implement. So the department can then operate in terms of that agreement with increased control systems coming into place. But in the past, I think that we have to acknowledge that those controls were not negotiated country to country adequately in the past.
Thank you. I'd like to invite everyone to a free lunch in the month. Thank you.
Yeah.